Welcome to Motive and Method. I'm Dr. Xanthi Mallett.
And I'm Tim Watson Munro.
Today we're going to be talking about the case of missing Victorian woman Samantha Murphy. It's been big in the news recently. Tim and I have been doing a lot of media around it, and we thought that our listeners might be interested in a breakdown of the case. So let's get into it. So, quick summary of the case for those of you who maybe haven't been following it in as much detail as Tim and I have. So, Samantha Murphy is a mother of three who went missing on the 4th of the 2nd from Mount Clear in Ballarat, which is Victoria. We'd heard very little information from the police until very recently, and that's what we're going to be covering today. A man has very, very recently been named as the person police believe to be responsible for her murder. He is 22-year-old Patrick Stevenson. And initially his name was suppressed and that was lifted. So we're going to talk a little bit about him later on and what we know, which is very minimal. But let's start off by going through the timeline of what happened to Samantha that we know and what is going to happen going forward. So, Tim, did you want to kick us off with the timeline of what happened on the 4th of February this year?
Well, Samantha went for a run, as she apparently did most Sundays. She was a fit and healthy mother. People expected her to come back. She was last seen leaving the family home at about 7 in the morning to go for a regular 20-kilometre run through the Canadian State Forest at Ballarat. Ballarat's surrounded by national parks and so on. It used to be a major gold mining town, very tight, cohesive town. Her exact route is unknown. She was captured on a neighbour's CCTV wearing black leggings and a maroon-brown singlet, as well as a smartwatch, and she had a phone. It would appear that she reached Mount Clear on foot, according to cell tower data. She was expected home at about 11 a.m. for a brunch, and when that didn't occur, her husband, Michael, contacted the police.
I think concerns had been raised within the family even before that, because my understanding is that she'd missed a business meeting that she was meant to be back for as well that morning. So, you know, this is a very reliable woman who this is totally out of character to be missing these kind of events. So I can see why, you know, even within 4 hours, the family was certainly very worried.
Sounds as though they're very tired and they're onto it very quickly. The following day, the police appealed for people with information about her disappearance to come forward. Initial concerns were raised because her disappearance was totally out of character. He was reliable, as you said, and the weather was hot. So those pleas continued until the time of the arrest. And as you and I have discussed with the media over the subsequent weeks from the disappearance, the community was very much involved in assisting police, certainly with line searches, and inevitably, I suspect, reviving other information that we're not privy to, which have led to the arrest.
Exactly. And we knew that there were always, in a missing person's case, there were always three options, right? Either they've suffered some form of misadventure. And that's what certainly the community thought initially, I think, that, you know, she was out there, she'd fallen, she'd perhaps some big knife, snake, whatever. She may be fallen down the mine. That was one of the hypotheses that was put forward. And so that's one option. So that's why there was a really very large scale search. If you remember, you probably saw that in the media. I think there were over 100 police, SES, fire service and community members out there as part of that search. So that was one option that the police obviously were looking closely at in those early days. The second option when somebody goes missing is that they've gone missing, we're talking adults, of their own free will. Certainly, I think the police looking at Samantha's history background, contacts, you know, all of those relationships, all those things going on, that seemed really unlikely from the beginning. So we were only left really with the option of third party involvement. And I think that although the police would have looked at all of these simultaneously, obviously they would have not narrowed in on one until they had evidence strongly indicating which of those particular options was most likely. I think one and two were ruled out fairly early on. So we were only left with that third party involvement, thinking she did not leave the forest on her own or of her own free will.
Yeah. And a lot of work went into that. And it seemed to be the obvious conclusion to reach, having explored the other two. A search area was then established just outside Buninyong, around 14 kilometres from where Samantha was last seen, as well as near to her home. It was very thorough, wasn't it? There was a lot of footage. There was heartbreaking footage of the daughter and the father appealing to the public. And I must say, you know, the community of Ballarat totally rallied behind this family. Even when the police called off the search, the community continued searching the field looking for her or her body.
I think, if anything, the community spirit really came out even more when the police called off their search. And certainly, yeah. I know you did a lot of media around it, but media outlets were asking me why the police would have called off the search when, you know, there was still community feeling that she could still be in that area and having potentially been the subject of an accident or whatever. But my response was, if the police have called off that search, it's because they know that she's not there. They're not going to do that otherwise. So I do believe that search was thorough, and I got the sense they potentially had information or intelligence that was leading them to believe she had been removed from that area. So that was my gut feeling.
That was my gut feeling too. But I also said, you know, people were saying, well, why have the police stopped trying? And I said, they haven't stopped trying. They've just narrowed their focus elsewhere. And in all likelihood, this crime will be solved on the basis of Meta IT data, phone pings, looking at who may have been in the area and so on. It would seem that that's what's led to this discovery and the arrest of the alleged offender.
Exactly. But there were some odd things that kind of came out as part of this over the last, you know, few weeks. Do you remember when it was revealed by the media that Samantha's dog, Ruby, had gone missing? I think that was around the 13th of February. And that was kind of like, is that linked? Is that not linked? Well, on the 14th of February, the police acknowledged for the first time, actually, that Samantha's disappearance was suspicious. Now, we all knew that, but clearly the police didn't actually want to come out and say that publicly until the 14th of February, when they first said that in a press conference. It was also revealed on the 14th of February that Ruby had died. Now, I don't know what Ruby died of, but there hasn't been any more suggestion that that was linked in any way to Samantha's disappearance. It's just one of those odd coincidences that came up as part of this case as it unfolded.
But it certainly fed into the rumour mill and the scuttlebutt. People were grasping at straws everywhere. There were nasty rumours circulating, which I won't repeat, which I felt were very unhelpful. They were a distraction to the police. And I read that some of these rumours were really causing serious divisions in the Ballarat community.
Oh, so, I'm sure. And I'm sure, as is common in cases such as this, that there were fingers being pointed at those closest to Samantha. And I would include potentially family members in that, because what we know, don't we, when something happens, those connected with the person who's been murdered are persons of interest. And all that means, just for clarity, because people get confused between the difference between a person of interest and a suspect, and they're very different things. So person of interest is just literally someone that the police are interested in, and they are included in that list. It's a very long list normally until they are excluded. That could be excluded on the basis of an alibi, for example. So being a person of interest is not in any way suspicious. It's just you're included until you're ruled out. Being a suspect, however, is very different. That means the police are suspicious of you for some reason, which means they have evidence or intelligence, et cetera, to class you in that category. And if you remember, it came out, the police acknowledged that Michael, Samantha's husband, was a person of interest. And I got asked about that in the media. And I was like, that literally just means that the police are looking at him because that is totally standard operating procedure. So that it means nothing. And ultimately, it's been borne out that Michael had nothing to do with this. So yes, I would warn it. I mean, we've warned people many times on this not to get engaged in that kind of social media, I guess, hypothesizing, guessing, tea leaf reading.
Hopefully all of that has now stopped. A person has been arrested, a person has been charged, and I would hope that this would lead to some feeling in the community because I'm sure that many people in Ballarat were suffering vicarious PTSD.
I'm sure.
When you don't have somebody arrested, it could be anyone, people become very suspicious.
And fearful.
And fearful. I remember years ago, a long time ago, there was two women who were murdered in Portland in Western Victoria. And I was retained by I think it was the Portland Council in conjunction with Victorian Police. And I flew down there and I took over with a police sergeant, I think it was, the local community radio station. And we did a group town debriefing, talking about what's going on, get rid of the paranoia. There was a Q&A session and I was almost administering group psychotherapy over community radio. And one of the things that came out of that for me was just how in small communities, when they lose one of their own, they band together. But there's also a lot of fear, as you've described, that because until they have an offender, in their mind, it could be anyone. So I would hope now that somebody's been charged. He's entitled to the presumption of innocence, of course. We're not commenting upon that, but it may lead to some sort of closure within the town of Ballarat.
Yeah. Totally agree. I imagine there would have been lots of calls to police, lots of suspicion, neighbours, etc. And hopefully that's put some of that to bed for that family as well as for the community at large. Do you also remember around the 22nd of February, lots of additional police were assigned to this case, and that included experts from various squads from Melbourne. They were kind of brought in to assist, and including sex crimes, anti-terrorism, etc. And again, the rumour mill started again. And, you know, for those listening, it did not mean that the police ever believed that, you know, this was a crime that should have fallen under any of those kind of gambits, those squads. All it meant that those people were particularly skilled in investigating complex, long-term investigations. So they really were bringing everything that they could to this investigation to find out what had happened to Samantha and why.
They were cherry-picking the cream. And again, it speaks to the considerable focus that the Victorian Police had on this case, a determination to solve the crime. And they were taking it very seriously. Bringing that caliber of person to assist in the investigation, I think, was quite unusual in some ways.
And it speaks to also their fears for Samantha's safety, because obviously people go missing all of the time and not everyone gets this level of interest, either public media interest or policing interest. So they obviously were very concerned from early days as to what happened to Samantha. And it wasn't until the 23rd of the second that police actually formally stated that they believed it was very doubtful that Samantha was alive. And I'm sure that was a huge blow to the family and the community. But again, you have to think that they had reason to be saying that. They must have had intelligence or evidence to suggest that that was the case, but they were very circumspect in what they were releasing. And I think there was a bit of frustration, but clearly it was for investigative purposes that they withheld the information until they thought it was appropriate and useful to the investigation to release whatever the public needed to know at that time.
Well, that's right. And they kept working at it though.
Mm-hmm.
They had people analysing data,
yeah.
You know, and you can never kind of discount the focus on these sorts of investigations. And then, of course, the Murphy's smash repair business became a focus. There was other speculation that there were some possible links to outlaw motorcycle gangs. I mean, it's quite extraordinary how these things just blow up and gather a life of their own on the basis of essentially Chinese whispers. But again, a distraction, very destructive and hurtful, no doubt, to the Murphys.
But you could see why the police would need to investigate that business and search it, you know, as part of a thorough investigation into a missing person who they firmly believed is deceased. So obviously they're going to search any properties that they know are intimately associated with Samantha. Yet, you know, again, the rumour mill started. And I think it's important to mention that, not to kind of feed into it, but to really highlight the intense pressure that family, especially Michael, was under. And, you know, given the fact that his wife has vanished, he's living through all of that vicarious trauma because he doesn't know where she is or what's happened. And the spotlight keeps kind of returning necessarily from the police perspective. They have to do due diligence. Yet to the public and the media, it all looks very suspicious. And so you can imagine the weight that man has been carrying until an individual was arrested.
Yeah, it's a huge tragedy, an immeasurable loss to the family. But I looked at some of the vision yesterday and you could see there was a measure of relief in terms of we have somebody. I mean, the other thing that struck me, getting back to resources, there are over 100 police, SES, Country Fire Authority, plus the community involved in the search for Samantha. They covered a large scale. Nothing of relevance was found. And eventually the police finally called off the formal search. But as you said, the community kept going for a while.
Yep. And it was 6 days after Samantha disappeared that Victoria's Missing Persons Squad took over as lead investigators. So again, experts in searching for those who have disappeared. And they would have continued down that path of looking at all three scenarios until they were certain that a third person had been involved with taking Samantha away from the forest on, allegedly, the day that she's alleged to have been murdered on the day that she disappeared from home. There was, do you remember, that also hit the press that, you know, there was some hope, and this must have been awful for the family, actually, some hope that Samantha was still alive after a few days, because there was CCTV image of a woman out jogging. Do you remember? And there was some potential that could have been Samantha. Sadly, a few days later, a woman came forward and identified herself as the woman out jogging in that video. So that must have been a blow to the family and the community who, you know, these kind of things come up, don't they? Missing persons investigations.
Well, people cling to hope.
Yes.
You know, where there's hope, there's possible life and vice versa. But regrettably, it was a non sequitur. Nothing came about. It was the wrong person. And there was then no news of Samantha for almost 5 weeks. I gather the police processed around 12,000 hours of CCTV. I mean, an average working week is 40 hours, so that puts it into some perspective. And over 500 separate pieces of information in the search. A massive effort, I think.
And a lot of that would have come from people in that immediate area. CCTV, dash cam footage, again, you know, people suspecting neighbours, etc., providing everything that they can to the police to assist them with their search for Samantha. But that is a huge amount of work to go through. So I think that's what people don't realise. When an investigation goes quiet on the surface, the public-facing investigation is quiet. All of this is going on behind the scenes. And I think people underestimate just how much work goes into this. Because the police acknowledge, you know, they didn't have any leads. So they were just literally going through absolutely everything, every rabbit hole, looking for something that would move the investigation forward.
You're the criminologist. But it's amazing from my observation over decades how IT technology becomes now such a powerful investigative tool.
Correct.
So you think about in the olden days, there were no mobile phones, no cell tower dumps, nothing like that. All you looked for really was corroborative evidence, people that may have seen the crime, or forensic evidence at the crime scene. Right. It would seem that this crime's been solved without much of that at all, and primarily on cell tower dumps and metadata analysis.
Well, that seems to be the case, and it will come out more, I think, as we go forward. But certainly, you know, I think of cases such as the missing Beaumont children, you know, that the children disappeared on Australia Day 1966 from Glenelg Beach, down in South Australia. And I always think, I've done quite a bit of work on that case, and I always think that those children couldn't have disappeared if that case happened today. There would have been CCTV on shops. There would have been people taking photographs on their mobile phones, you know, of each other, and the children would have been captured at the beach, and so would whomever they were speaking to. I just don't think a crime like that in such a public place could happen now. However, a crime in a, you know, fairly remote, very quiet national park, you can see how somebody can disappear and leave very few traces behind them. And the offender also leave very few traces.
Well, as far as we know, I mean, they stopped the physical search well ahead of the arrest, didn't they?
They did. And I just wanted to raise that information about the cell tower dump. So that was released. The police basically made an announcement that they were, we call it a cell tower dump there, collecting information from the cell tower about everyone whose phones are pinged in an area, in essence. Now, this kind of signified to me that the police may be onto something, because they very rarely make those kind of statements. It felt like a very pointed statement, I would say. And I thought it was very strategic in that piece of information being released when it was, which was a few days before the arrest. And so obviously that, though, is a huge amount of work going through every person whose phone has pinged, triangulating them. How often have they been there? Were they at the same time that Samantha was there? Did their phone ping near hers more than once? This is huge. That is a huge amount of data to trawl through.
And I guess we'll hear more about this when the hand-up brief is prepared. There's a committal hearing, and ultimately there may or may not be a trial. It's yet to be determined, but a wealth of evidence, and it's fascinating how that worked, leading to an arrest on the 6th of March at 6 a.m., almost 5 weeks after Samantha vanished. A 22-year-old man from Ballarat was arrested. The following day at 9:30 a.m., the media were informed of the arrest. At 2 p.m. on the 7th of March, the accused was charged with one count of murder and appeared before the Ballarat Magistrates Court. At that time, his name was suppressed. His lawyer argued that releasing it would jeopardise his right to a fair trial, no comment, and that he'd been suffering from poor mental health since his arrest, no comment.
But, very wise, not commenting on those elements. No. All the other information that we were told was very scant initially when that man was arrested. He was said to not be known or linked to the Murphy family, and that he was not cooperating in terms of disclosing where Samantha's remains were hidden. And that was literally all we knew, wasn't it? That he was a local Ballarat man and that he was 22 years of age. Until the 8th of the 3rd, when the suppression order was actually lifted, that interim order was lifted, and he could be named as Patrick Stevenson. He's local too, and actually grew up in Ballarat and lived in Scotsburn at the time that he was arrested. The only other information that has come out so far is that he was involved with the local football club, and that's interesting because his father is an Australian Football League player. And also that this was his first time in custody. Now, clearly he was retained in custody. It's a very serious charge. And he will remain there until he returns to court on the 8th of August this year. Then what police have alleged is that Stevenson murdered Samantha on the day she went missing, so the 4th of the 2nd. But they haven't said anything regarding the cause or manner of death. And obviously, until her body is located, that's going to be very difficult. They've only confirmed that this was not a hit and run. They've also said that they are going to allege that it was a deliberate attack, but they are not looking for anyone else in relation to Samantha's murder at this time. Now, people have asked me if it's unusual for somebody to be charged with murder when no body has been located. And I would say it is quite unusual, especially, you know, we're only five weeks may seem like a long time to people, but it's actually not in a forensic and a policing investigation. So what it means, the fact that they've arrested him without a body means they have what they believe significant either forensic or intelligence to determine that that charge can hold. And obviously it's been through the DPP, Department of Public Prosecutions, and that charge has been laid. So we will have to wait in here until the committal hearing in a few months' time, exactly what that evidence is, but the police must consider it compelling enough to bring that charge.
Yeah, I think it's worth saying, though, be that as may, any accused person is entitled to the presumption of innocence.
Absolutely.
We don't know what the story is. We don't know what the defence is. We can't really comment too much about any of that. And as you correctly point out, these matters will unfold with the affluxion of time, and the public will be better informed if they're allowed to be.
Exactly. And we will hear the information that's appropriate to be released to the public. But ultimately, only if this reaches court, and we are a very long way from that. These are early days in this investigation. The police now have a huge amount of work to do to build a brief of evidence to submit before the committal hearing, when that evidence will be tested to see whether the charges will go forward to trial. We're a long way from that. And obviously, until then, this person remains innocent until proven otherwise. So speculating on any of that is not for us. And I would urge anyone to avoid doing that on social media as well. So we're simply reporting what the police are alleging at this stage.
Just harking back to my observations of Michael Murphy, and we feel for that family, but very significant level. But when he was interviewed, I think it was yesterday, he expressed his relief during a media interview. He said along the lines, it's like someone let a pressure valve off. He also said how awful the last few weeks had been, but how the community had rallied around his family, and he was very grateful for that. Hats off to the Ballarat community. You know, it was quite extraordinary the amount of support they provided. I watched the mayor of Ballarat interviewed this morning on television with you, I think. And
yeah, it was a double header.
Again, he said, look, we're a small town, 144,000 people. But when times are tough, we stand together. And they certainly did with this investigation.
I thought he was very eloquent, actually, and really spoke to the pain, but also the strength in that community. And they've offered that to the Murphy family. And I think everyone else is very grateful that they have had that support. And watching that presser of Michael Murphy expressing his relief, you could see that pressure coming off. As he said, he described it as a pressure valve. And you could actually witness that. I mean, to not have those fingers being pointed anymore, to have that social media conspiracy theories. So now he can actually focus on grieving and helping support his family and remaining strong for them, as I'm sure that he will. At the time that we're recording this, Samantha's body hasn't been discovered. Now, obviously, the police are searching everywhere that they can in relation to particularly the person who's now accused of her murder. They will be looking at any properties that he had access to, any cars that he had access to. They will be tracing his movements from the time that Samantha is known to have vanished through to when he was obviously arrested. So that is going to be the focus of the police investigation going forward, very much heavily focused on finding Samantha's remains.
I really hope that's done quickly. You know,
I do too.
There can't be full closure, if that's the right description, until that occurs. My thoughts are with the family. It will also assist the community. You know, a lot of these cases, we know they don't find the body, and people struggle with that for years and decades.
Always, actually. I've worked with, I mean, I know you have as well, lots of families whose loved one has never returned to them. And it's just an ongoing, ambiguous trauma that they suffer, and not to have had that loved one returned, not to have the opportunity to give them death rights, burial rights, you know, whatever is appropriate for that family, is a significant burden to bear. And you have to remember as well that Samantha's body will be a primary source of evidence. So whomever is responsible for killing Samantha, that evidence that may be on her clothing or whatever will be essential in helping to determine that and demonstrate that to a court satisfaction of beyond a reasonable doubt. So forensically and psychologically, it's essential that Samantha is found. And we know that the police are obviously doing everything they can. Shane Patton, the police commissioner for Victoria, has been quoted as saying that investigations will continue at a very heavy pace. And they're still asking for help from the public in terms of dash cam, CCTV, if anyone has any information that can help narrow down potentially the accused's movements, which will be assisted, I think, by the fact their name has now been released. So people may now be able to offer further information in relation to that so that the police can hopefully piece together what they believe happened and to ultimately find where Samantha's remains are so she can be returned to her family.
Well, there's going to be a vigil held in Ballarat on the 8th of March. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that will be well attended, and it'll be very healing for some, a very, very sad occasion for most.
Mm-hmm. And I just hope, as you do, as you mentioned, that Samantha is found soon and the family and the community can start in some way to heal from this, as they have a very long road ahead of them in terms of the criminal process. We know that, and it's going to be a very painful process for them as each time this comes back into the media, each time there's a committal or a further part of the legal process, it's going to be another reminder of what they've lost. So I'm just hoping that they can get as much healing done as possible. And that will obviously require Samantha's remains to be returned.
The other comment I'd make is just just on the media, it's been an extraordinary amount of interest, hasn't there? I've lost touch with how many interviews I've done, and same for you. It's quite interesting these days how immersed the media become in these cases.
And it's not every case. It's not every case.
No, I was going to say why it's some and not others. Yep. I guess that's a discussion for another podcast, but we've touched on it in the past, haven't we?
We have. And and I think this case has clearly resonated. And I did give some thought as to why this case has resonated so much with the public and the media. And I wonder if part of it is because Samantha was so normal. She was, by which I mean, you know, she was just going about her daily routine. She wasn't, you know, a celebrity. She was just a normal mum of three doing what she did, going about her daily life. And many of us follow exactly that same pattern. We're all normal people. You know, I go running. I'm very patterned in my behavior. And it's been suggested that the fact that she did run regularly could have put her at risk if somebody were aware of her movements, for example. Any habitual behavior can put you at risk from predatory individuals. I do the same things every day. So I'm aware of this. And I just think in essence, what I'm trying to say is we can imagine being Samantha. We're normal people going about our lives, and that causes fear because normally in cases you want to be able to kind of think, oh, well, that wouldn't happen to me because I wouldn't put myself in that situation because it was risky for some reason, for example. But here you've got a woman just going for a run. And I think that is why people are really taken back because it was just such a normal activity for a normal person, and any of us could imagine being Samantha, and that's scary.
Well, you know, we've spoken about this too. One woman a week is murdered in Australia. Not always random people that allegedly do it, but it's a staggering statistic, and more needs to be done in that area in terms of preventative work. Well, we'll wait and see. It's been a very sad week for many.
It has, but I want to just give a final shout out to Victorian Police because you're right. This is alleged to be a crime where the victim and offender were unknown to each other. And those are particularly hard to solve when there's no connection between the accused and the deceased. And it takes so much work for police to progress these cases. And I think they were facing some criticism earlier on of not being seen to do enough. You know, when they said stop the search, as you mentioned, you know, why have they stopped looking? Clearly they hadn't. And I think we have to give, you know, due credit to the police for obviously working so hard to progress this investigation. So I think that's something that needs to be acknowledged.
Oh, I totally acknowledge it. Well done. Fantastic work. And well done, Ballarat.
Exactly. So that was Motive and Method. I'm Dr. Xanthi Mallett.
And I'm Tim Watson Munro.
And if you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we would be very grateful if you gave us a review. And we look forward to covering more topics for you in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.